No, that was all I had at that stage. Very helpful.
There was to do with the drill sites that were in the heritage area on the map that showed some indications. Are they all prospective drill sites or all prospective mines?
Which map was this?
This was on the dense that was particularly well written.
May have been included in what's report.
Oh, okay, Haven's heritage report.
It was just a question as to whether they would all become prospective mine sites or they would all just be investigation.
Yeah, hopefully, because that's why we drill holes. But right across the GHL, there's mines, about 70 old mines across the entire area and that nature. You can think of them almost as like coal seams, but they just change thickness a bit more. But they do run for up to a kilometre in length in the area, I suppose.
But he's not saying that you wouldn't put an edit in every single
location. Oh, no. Maybe every pull a number out of there, but say 500 metres, maybe.
As the point of drilling, presumably they're vertical.
They are pretty much vertical holes there, yes.
That's to give you some sort of idea of the stratigraphy that then you can enter horizontally, is that the idea?
To measure the stratigraphy. The lithostratigraphy up there.
I'm an archaeologist.
No, it's one of the big words I've learned. Because there's no, it's to change of rock.
Yes.
And for grey, which is back to the Edens and Pan requirements, you need to actually, in order to obtain a mining permit, you have to have a level of confidence around what's underneath the ground. So we need to drill enough holes to be able to kill us.
Right.
We know that. Probably that will mean a hole roughly every 50 metres within a certain part to start mining. As a mining company, you might not want to drill that thing, but we actually have to.
It's just confirmation. But is the you said as a guide about looking at one truck per hour on a standard mining process, but if you actually looked and ended up hitting big, is there a prospect that might expand or increase exponentially? Or
no, not exponentially. Just going to do quick numbers 10. Yeah, that's right. So that would be a small mine producing about 50,000, mining about 50,000 tons of rock, which is 20,000 cubic meters. That's about, you drive one truck, 20 ton truck per hour. Then it really will go in multiples of that because you've got a set of people. And as an upper one, you've basically got to run more than one line in there, so maximum would be, say, four times that number. And then you're, but that's on the scale of the sort of larger overseas underground mines. It's actually getting quite a large one, so then you're talking about 300 people, employees, just a whole 24-hour operations, and just a whole lot of logistics, which I just don't think. You haven't got the physical area outside to actually have all the infrastructure that you need for that, because it's on the side of a hill, basically. I might just say that the the attached, the heritage assessment and those drill hole locations, because that was originally done for Department of Conservation Access Arrangement, subsequently for resource consent application. So because why they actually put it there, you see the summer. Most of them is over quite a large area, is it? Yeah, so
that was the one that was covered.
Yeah. So the green is the Department of Conservation land. And they pretty, each of those is like those sites is located at a previous mining location where we know there was mines operating there that have just been worked limited amount. That's why they've targeted those locations.
Thank you. I have no additional questions. I think I've asked them in the previous two.
I'm looking forward to the exams, actually, to be educated.
Right, so Dr. Court's prepared a two-page summary that he'll read out and hand up.
I'll keep on to myself as well. What I've done here is I've simply created a summary of the whole gist of my original evidence rather than reading it, the introduction and conclusion. So it gives a bit more of a gist of what we're looking at. My name's Dr. Hayden Court. I'm managing director of a company called New Zealand Heritage Properties Limited, and we undertake cultural heritage management and consultancy services around the country. I have 14 years' experience in national and international heritage consulting, including lecturing at a couple of universities. My PhD and research area is in archaeological and mock heritage, with particular focus on metallurgy. I have been and are involved in the mitigation of effects for mining across the globe as it relates to heritage and archaeology. My evidence addresses Chapter 26, Heritage of the Proposed District Plan, on behalf of New Zealand Tungsten Mining, and relates specifically to the proposed scheduling of the Glenorchy Heritage Landscape and the relationship between this landscape and modern mining. I review evidence as submitted in relation to the PDP, or the Proposed District Plan, Heritage Chapter 26, and draw my knowledge and experience and the heritage survey undertaken, which was included in the appendix of the original evidence. While gold mining and pastoral development were the initial reasons for settlement in Glenorchy, it was the mining of scheelite that was becoming the area's primary industry. Glenorchy and the GHL have a strong connection to mining. Tungsten mining began in the 1880s on Mount Judah and have continued in various scales since, and followed the wax and the wane of the mining cycle and the demand for scheelite throughout the 19th and 20th centuries. Historical research and a heritage survey, as included in the appendix of original submission, undertaken as part of NZTN's application for access arrangement with the Department of Conservation, has shown the GHL to be what I call a complex of sites that include the primary evidence for mining in terms of the mine entrances, the adits and the sluiced areas, the mining bypipes, which is a secondary part of the process, which includes the waste rock and tailings, and then thirdly, the necessary mining infrastructure such as roads, processing areas and water bases, etc., etc. For the 130 plus years of mining in the area, evidence shows that the extraction swings between small scale and industrial operations. The features and evidence that remain within the GHL reflect this sequence. However, despite the definition of a heritage landscape in Section 2 of the PDP, there is, I believe, a lack of an obvious assessment methodology for identifying and assessing the value and significance of proposed heritage landscapes, including identifying the importance of and the interplay between the range of site and feature types. Relatedly, the PDP does not have a means of valuing the ongoing occupation by an industry, an original or long-term occupier, which in themselves contribute to the overall historical, social, and cultural significance of a space, place, or building. Thus, does not appear to have allow for the sustainable use of historic heritage. The main reason for scheduling historic heritage places and a district plan is to ensure the effective protection and management of the heritage resource in order to maintain a connection with past events, experiences, or activities. How effectively a heritage place or building achieves this connection is considered by how well it can be interpreted by the novice persons. The easiest form of interpretation is to enable the continued occupation of a site by those occupants who in themselves contribute to the understanding of a site or overall site value. And I could give some examples there if necessary. Where an existing owner, tenant, or tenant has maintained a long history with a building or a place, and that occupation contributes to the value, weight needs to be given to the continued use of the space and the ease in which this can occur. Despite being a nationally significant area, the GHL is not well known, and the legal interpretation made available to the public does not do it justice. This means that the most novice persons visiting the area will not appreciate the complexity and the sequence of mining evidence on show. The GHL is a nationally significant heritage landscape. This does not, however, I believe, rule out the continuation of modern mining, whereby these activities maintain core values and where heritage features and archaeological sites are managed and the amenity values improved while enhancing user and visitor experience through collaboration. Similarly, providing economic benefit to the community, which further enhances local responses to heritage protection and management, i.e. getting the community involved in the heritage outcomes. Accordingly, the key features to be protected in the GHL appear general and on the face of it to contain some bias, thus are unlikely to protect the ratio of evidence of those particular features and the feature types within the GHL. Under 26.12.9.3, few sites within the GHL meet the legislative definition of an archaeological site. Other sites that do meet the definition have not been recorded and thus not considered under the known site protections. It is better to understand the full nature of evidence, evaluate all parts, and mitigate in this context, which could mean allowing the modification of some physical features, such as adits, to better protect and manage the range of sites within the complex and that ratio. For this reason, and those stated above, and in my evidence, of course, I recommend that modern mining be provided for within the PDP to maintain a connection within the GHL, subject to the identification and sustainable management of heritage and archaeological features and sites within the complex and general improvements in visitor experiences.
I suppose I should ask you the questions first. Just looking at paragraph 412 of your evidence on page 6. And this is something you just raised also in your summary. Is an archaeological site only an archaeological site if it falls within the definition of the Heritage New Zealand Act?
Under what we do, I'd say yes, it would. And the way we would deal with a situation like this is an archaeological site, it's fairly black and white. It's any area that witnessed human occupation prior to the year 1900 that can also, by archaeological means, provide some information about the history of New Zealand and its people. Anything outside of that we tend to refer to as being more related to heritage, because it's not as easy to find it hasn't got that set time period before which we know must be applied for under the Heritage New Zealand Pohiritonga Act. So the way it is dealt with is yes, that's definitely.
So if you have a site that's post-1900 and clear that in this area it's a fair amount of are post-1900 and they are only really able to be interpreted and understood through archaeological means, what are they if they're not archaeological sites?
we would say that they were simply heritage sites. But to be become an archaeological site under, you know, under the legislation we work under, and if it's post 1900, it would have to be
Yes, that's under the Heritage New Zealand Act. That I understand that under that. That's the reason why the town planner didn't come into existence until after I graduated. The Resource Management Act is a different beast. And I'm not sure, and perhaps Ms. Baker Galloway can respond to this, but I'm not sure that the Resource Management Act is bound by the definition of archaeological site in the Heritage New Zealand Act. That definition in that act is to bring it within the ambit of Heritage New Zealand's regulatory mechanisms. I would have thought any site that can only be interpreted by archaeological means is by its very nature an archaeological site. We could call it an archaeological place, if you like.
Yeah, but technically under that same notion, then, you would say a landfill could be same, is the same as the same.
Yes, I would have thought a landfill is the classic example of an archaeological site.
Or an archaeological
landfill. Having spent 2 years analysing middens from Chatham Islands, it is an archaeological site, it's just waiting for the archaeologists to get into it.
Yes. Well, I guess it depends on under what the auspices you are then required to do something about it, I guess.
Well, that's why I'm raising the question, because it seems to me that in this instance, and it's not the only instance, I mean, I know it's not in this district, but the Bannockburn Sprucings in Felton Road, they have quite a few areas in there that 1930s occupation, probably only an archaeological investigation could come to any understanding of what was actually involved.
Well, see, often in these sorts of cases, though, it does come back down to do such spaces or places provide some sort of character or understanding to an area. So other stuff we've done here in Queenstown has been, and when the policy statement does it provide for the character of an area, in which case people may not necessarily fully understand what sluicing is or how it works, but those scarred landscapes provide a character of an area that may not, you know, that do not necessarily need to be, archaeologically excavated, because really we'd have to question how we would really undertake that excavation.
Well,
we could investigate it archaeologically, but there wouldn't necessarily be any.
Well, no, in the sluicings there would be. There's a few caves which people lived in the 1930s.
Yeah.
That's the potential archaeological investigation I'm referring to.
Right.
And I suspect it's the similar sort of thing in this area, where there's a thin layer of human existence, if you like.
That's right.
But it's post-1900.
Yeah. And the term, the year 1900 is purely arbitrary.
It used to be 100 years.
It used to be 100 years.
Yes.
And working in Southeast Asia, the lights of Vietnam and Laos, the archaeological period was anything before the American War, which was 1975. So it is purely an arbitrary definition,
yes.
A date.
That's what I mean, and that's why I'm wondering whether it is relevant for us to restrict ourselves to the Heritage New Zealand definition in this area, in the plan, when clearly, reading your report, there is a lot of interesting and useful archaeological information that can be uncovered.
That's right, and that's my point, is making a reference to archaeological sites as known, it's essentially known by who? Is that known by the fact that they meet the definition under the Act, or that they're simply listed in the National Database of Archaeological Sites, which these ones are, but they don't necessarily meet the technical definition. Like if someone was wanting to modify them, they wouldn't necessarily need an archaeological authority from Heritage New Zealand.
No, but isn't the point of the heritage area, I'll start calling it that, to ensure that that archaeological remain does not disappear without investigation, even though Heritage New Zealand is not able to release legislation.
And that's my point.
Yes, and so maybe, I mean, and I've checked, and I can't find a definition in the proposed district plan of archaeological site.
No.
And that might be a lacuna that needs to be filled, but it may also be that the explanatory statement that you are referring to may need to be clearer as to that it includes archaeological information which is available in the area.
Yeah.
And is that what you're saying, that there is all that information? By calling it archaeological sites, you're actually negating the value of it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
I think you and I are agreeing on what.
That's why the point is that those sorts of definitions sort of could lead to loss by attrition, if you know what I mean. Where if we're looking at something that is that well defined there, then and it doesn't get meted, then the real potential is that not that ratio of evidence is actually protective. So the way I understand and the way I read those proposed protections actually allow for only the more visual or the more significant features to be fully protected, at possibly a detriment to other things that actually provide more social history. So what I'm saying is that maybe those most significant features that's proposed in here could be lost if, you know, at some point, to maintain a better connection to that social history through the protection of things that are less significant, like, you know, the water bases and things like that. And that's where I think it needs far more definition around it. How has someone come to the conclusion that those particular things should be protected when other things are left out, but also could potentially lead to the loss of connection to an industry that has placed all that stuff there and is still arguably important up to the 80s because it's now subject to these protections. So my thoughts are that the loss of some features to protect a greater range of features is better, especially when you're coupling that with the ability to long-term interpret the area by seeing that boutique mining on the site. Because in 30 years' time, what Gary proposes to do in the next few years will also be very interesting, and mining methods will have moved on, and then there's that further social history that can be understood well into the future rather than restricting it simply to a period of 130 years.
So, am I understanding that you consider that there is value in interpretation, even if the doing the work may, which invariably it does with archaeology, destroy the site or parts of it?
As long as those, with the right amount of mitigation, of course.
But it can be, well, I'm just thinking there's a very good example, I don't know if you've seen it, of an archaeological site. It's in Paris and it's underneath the Notre Dame.
I haven't seen it, but no.
Yes, and it's Roman, the foundations and central heating of Roman villas.
Yeah.
And it's underneath, and clearly they had to damage some of it to display what they displayed, but you. That's the sort of interpretation.
And the same thing exists for heritage buildings and other heritage areas. You know, the best protection is provided by an economic use of that place. And so I've been involved in other cases whereby protections were provided on buildings where huge weight was given to the fact that those people were still in their original building, to the point where they weren't allowed to change the layout of their factory because of these protections, but yet that they actively, constructively sought to move them out to a more suitable space, whereas I argued that actually if you're putting so much weight on those values, then there needs to be leeway there to have those people remain. It's like fire departments and fire stations, really, after the fire station service is gone, you know, how many uses can be made for that new space? So the best protection of that building and the long-term interpretation of that building is afforded by the fire service. Many little kids can say, oh, look, there's the fire station, that's what they look like, because I can see a fire engine in it, as opposed to converting it to a three-bedroom apartment office. That, you know, that interpretation is lost. So what I'm suggesting here is that with effective mitigation, far better outcomes can be had by allowing that continuation of use, especially in the face of the fact that heritage is not, it's not a stagnant quality. It changes as per community wants and needs. So a lot of the people in Glenorchy do have that social connection to those places. And to lose that connection, obviously loses that interest in it as well. So as long as people are saying, well, yes, my grandfather worked there, then his father or whatever, of course they then have the active appreciation of that place and actively seek to maintain, you know, that, essentially that protection in the face of economic development.
Okay. Now, the other thing is, just from your summary, I take it that the issue is in part that the identifying the key features of significance has missed, if you like, all that unseen archaeological layer, and that is potentially as more important than what can be seen.
That's right. It seems somewhat a superficial protection, isn't it? It requires just clarification as to, you know, how and which features, you know, should be protected.
Basically partly answered by the discussion you've just had, but I'm sort of taking from it that if, let's assume there was no interest in mining up there anymore and you left it as it was now, and as I understand what you're saying is over time the connection would be lost between things would get overgrown and become less
obvious. There'd probably be two losses of connection, one being physical with like terraces for huts and things becoming overgrown that you can't see them, and
yeah,
you can't interpret the fact that people were mining there and living there.
Yeah,
and things like that.
And the social one.
And then there's the social one, the loss of connection to the community, whereby they, you know, one of the things that I've noticed from being there is the great privilege people tell you, have been telling you about the stories they've had from being up there and being involved, or grandparents generally being involved. So there is that loss as well.
There was something else we want to raise, was more for, would have been for Mr. Vivian, unfortunately, so.
You can dictate the question if you like, and this will take it down.
Yes, it's a more specific question, but it relates to, I think it was touched on by my colleague about the key features to be protected. And I think, but looking at the wording that was in Mr. Vivian's evidence, he talked about words like significant mining entrances, whatever significant is, and historic tracks, whatever they might be. And I'm just wondering whether the better solution up in this area here might be to have some form of map identification and a schedule rather than using words which are very difficult to quantify in any way. Just a thought, but it just seemed to me that it would provide greater certainty and sort of picks up on some of the comments you were making as well. So what would be a significant mining entrance, for example? Yeah. Different things to different people, I guess.
It is. I'm always conscious of the fact you want to tell the long-term story and be able to show the change through time. So what someone might say was a significant entry, I would say probably you know, may not be. Mm. Bigger's not always better. It might be the fact that it's a small edit, a small entry, with the remnants, you know, with the waste rock right beside it, you know, the one person operation compared to the large industrial. So it would really, really depend.
That's why I asked that question really, because it may be that a small 1887 drive might be more heritage value than a larger industrial scale of 1944 one may be. So that's why I was thinking maybe one way of dealing with that might be to identify them in a more specific way. And you might not say, here's the 37 known drives, all of them are significant, we're going to protect everyone to a dying breath. That doesn't necessarily mean that, but it may rank them or particularly identify the seven or eight particularly significant ones on the plan. Perhaps it's coordinates or something like that.
I'm wondering whether the focus on key features is an appropriate focus in a heritage area where, as you say, there's a mixture of obvious and non-obvious heritage fabric, if you like.
Sure.
And the whole point of a heritage area is to enable an evaluation of that appropriately when an application is made, and then focusing on some particular features may actually miss the point. Is that what you're getting at?
That's the gist of, because, and especially in the absence of a methodology for how they've been assessed as significant in the first place.
Yes. I mean, it would be different if it had the sort of heritage landscape methodology that Dr. Stevenson and Mr. Petrie had done. Maybe Dr. Petrie, I'm not sure. But anyway.
He is Dr. now.
Yeah, so if they had carried out a similar sort of thing there, then you would have a whole range of different information to start with. But isn't the point of provision in the plan that we're starting from a certain level of ignorance and we want to make sure that we don't lose anything of importance that is there? Is that it in a nutshell?
Yeah, in a nutshell. That's right.
We want to improve our knowledge, not just maintain our knowledge.
That's right.
If you like.
Yeah, I think the way it's defined at the moment really could lead to loss by attrition of certain things. If you're individually assessing individual features, you know, there are hundreds of them, and then individually they're not that significant. But as a complex, as part of the picture, small things do become, in which case the larger things, a little more significant, sort of can fade away.
And the connections become apparent, but aren't apparent if you look at the individuals.
That's right.
Yes. I'm trusting that Ms. Jones is making good notes of all this.
One, if you wouldn't mind, just in saying with the team for Mr. Espy, is why, Mr. Vivian, pardon me.
Sorry, Espy.
Vivian. Was why he took exception to they're in accordance with best practice. And it's in 459 of his evidence.
Yes, but I was going to ask him, could he not consider that heritage experts have best practice? Yeah.
It would seem to me that,
because I think they do,
it would seem to me that in accordance with best practice is quite well defined as opposed to ill defined if you look at it. And a question for you, Mr. Cox, is if you take heritage not being a static quality, I'll accept that, and your analogy when you compare it to farming and the heritage that's fine. A while ago I asked the chair of Federated Farmers if he was concerned about the transition that we're kind of going from farmers being the custodians of the land to a much more intensified spreadsheet-based form of farming. And he frowned and gave us a one-word answer, which was yes. And using that analogy, what would you consider the impact of modern methods being more intensified, therefore more possibly invasive?
Well, to be honest, I don't think they'll be any more invasive than what they already have been. And the way I evaluate archaeological sites is you look at amenity value, and so because much of this mining is going to be underground, you can't have the public down there at the moment anyway. So I think that there's actual benefit to by having modern mining with modern safety standards that can ensure that an area is safe and people can visit the old edits, the old mines, and then be easily be able to compare that to the new sites. So I don't see there being any great conflict other than what would generally be required under mitigation anyway. And we've always talked about the need for collaboration between affected stakeholders, you know, Department of Conservation, Heritage New Zealand, the community. So there would be a amount of gains, or good potential gains for heritage in allowing someone that can maintain an area, keep terraces clear of scrub, things like that. And I think they're probably a worthy custodian of an area when it's their forebears, for lack of a better word, that has contributed to that area anyway.
So even if you took an extrapolation of health and safety to the point that you say, well, this is a work site, we're going to exclude the public from the work site, which is, you know, an ultimate extent of health and safety, you wouldn't see that as being.
There won't, well, my understanding is you wouldn't exclude people from all parts of the landscape. It would be those standards that would be directly being worked. That's fair to say. And in the greater scheme of heritage, any mining today is only temporary. And for the next mining cycle or the next wane in demand, that mine then becomes the new feature attraction. That's the GHL. So if we think of it like that, this mining is going to be no different to any other mining in terms of following that mining cycle. And what has been undertaken today will become tomorrow's visitor attraction.
And one last thing is that you mentioned positive mitigation outcomes. Could you expand on that?
As I was saying, I think that there can be loss of some features or areas to modern mining, because they are going to modify some things. As part of offsetting that loss, a mitigation outcome might be secure this particular mine entrance so people can travel in it. You know, they're not necessarily going to do it out of kindness of their heart, but that can be something that can be provided for them as mitigation for the loss of this one, which I would say would be far better outcome because it improves the amenity value of that particular entrance because they can't go in it now. So things like that, visitor experiences, you know, like visitor centres, understanding, you know, telling those stories. At the moment, I don't believe they're being told very well up there, whereas mitigation could be that, you know, there is a visitor centre where you have, you know, stories in various different formats or means, you know, telling those social and physical stories.
This is really a question for Mr. Vivian, but in paragraph 4.98 in his evidence, and he goes on in paragraph 4.106, I think he is, his comments about subsurface features having little amenity value and therefore greatly reduced heritage value seems to conflict with what District Dr. Corn has just told us he might like to reflect on that. And in particular, his suggestions to the key changes, the key features to be protected. He might have, having heard what Dr. Corn has just said, he may want to reflect on what he's suggested should be included and excluded from that provision. Do you have any other questions, Mr. Duggan?
Not at this stage, no.
Other than that, did you want to make any comment on the definition of archaeological site?
No. I mean, I did the same research you did probably and confirmed that it's not defined in the Act, it's not defined in the plan. And yes, can't really advance, and I'm not an expert on what you two were talking about, so I can't advance that conversation any further.
But it is a legal question. Does that definition have any power, if you like, under the RMA?
Well, it doesn't appear to be cross-referred to the RMA.
No, it's not like some of those other
terms
which do refer to it as used in such and such.
Yeah. It is referenced in the definition of historic heritage.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's...
But only in the most general sense.
Yeah, which isn't terribly helpful. So, on the face of it, it's not constrained by the Heritage Act's definition.
Do you think it would be it would assist the usability of the plan if there were a definition included in the plan that made it clear that it included sites that were post-1900 but capable of being interpreted through archaeological means?
That goes beyond being a legal question.
No, that wasn't a legal question.
Yeah.
That was, would it be helpful?
Would it be helpful?
When you came back.
Well, I think defining it would be helpful.
Yes.
But I don't know what
the definition might be.
I think
of
your suggestion. Yeah.
What
it's defined as. Depends what it's defined as, yeah. And the follow-through consequences of that. So, yes, I agree. It's a gap in the Act that there isn't a definition and that should be remedied. But I'd have to consult with my team about what that best definition or best definition.
Yes.
So we can come back to you on that as well.
I'm not sure that we can. I'm not sure that we have scope to fix that. Ms. Jones might have a better idea. I doubt that anyone said what a definition of archaeological site in the plan. They have?
Yeah, we've put it in 26.2, that really refers to definition. The issue that's being discussed right now about whether we write that definition or say our own, that's not been dealt with, but the issue of it being helpful to include the definition.
Yes, so you've just you've included there.
Thanks.
I hope that was only a tissue.
Yeah.
It
was the wake up.
Okay. Well, I think we can probably satisfactorily leave at that point.
Thank you.
Does anyone have anything else they need to raise? Now, in terms of Mr. Pilling's answers,
yes.
4 p.m. tomorrow?
Well, hopefully his man flu's not too serious and he can do that.
He must be able to lay in bed.
All I can do is do my best to encourage him.
What's on Sky that he's.
I don't know.
Can we add
not the Olympics, yes. So, yeah. Yes, I'll let you know if there is an issue with that timing.
Yeah.
If
there's a difficulty if it's later than that, of course, is that the council need to have the opportunity to comment on it and they need to get it in time for them. That's why we're finishing at 4 p.m. tomorrow. So.
Right, yeah, okay. All right, well, we'll let them know as soon as we get back. And, I mean, there weren't too many questions, so it should be too onerous.
It felt a bit like an 1880s Glenorchy mine. I think what they were like crawling in the snow to the mine from the morning.
Man,
where's
that didn't exist at all.
Yeah.
not the trans-English who's in mourning by any chance.
Or else he's my son that he's getting over it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a hustle. That's more like a fit.
I'll adjourn until
35. Thank you.
Thanks.